This is a 9-year-old singing opera. If you tour YouTube, you can find 5-year-olds belting out power ballads and crushing the national anthem. Are we pushing talented young singers to do too much, too soon? It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going to talk about musical training and vocal cord development, starting with children. I'll talk with Kristen Stanton, Artistic and Executive Director at the Iowa Youth Chorus. Joy Hesse will also be here. She is a speech-language pathologist at Iowa ENT Center. She specializes in the care of professional voice users. I'll also talk with a young opera singer about his voice and the challenges he faces. Later in the hour, we'll talk about the challenges we all face as our vocal cords age. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Shows like America's Got Talent and YouTube videos have introduced many of us to phenomenal young singers. And many talented kids out there would also love to be in the spotlight, belting out ballads like this 12-year-old girl, Carolyn Costa. With this trend, are we asking young performers to do too much too soon? This hour, we're going to talk about musical training and vocal cord development, starting with children. As the hour goes on, we'll talk about how our vocal cords continue to change as we grow and age. Joy Hesse is here. She's a speech-language pathologist at Iowa ENT Center. She specializes in the care of professional voice users. Hello, Joy.
Good morning.
Thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Kristen Stanton is also here. She's Artistic and Executive Director at the Iowa Youth Chorus. Hello, Kristen.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today.
You're welcome.
And Joy, of course, we can listen to the voices of children change as they grow, from the baby battle to the high-pitched toddler voices and on as kids grow. Can you give us an idea of what's going on with vocal cord development as kids grow and change?
Well, the voice box, or the larynx as it's called, is similar to other parts of your body where as it matures, it becomes obviously larger and more sophisticated, where the vocal folds of an infant are very short and they're not as complex. They don't have as many layers as the vocal folds of a, say, teenager or an adult.
All right. And of course, we all know that children, especially very small children, can make a whole lot of noise. So is there anything about pushing the voice that could be dangerous for a child?
Well, yeah, when I listen to voices on the shows, as you had done the demonstration or the voice clip, what comes to my mind is I would really like to see what's going on as they're singing. That little girl sounds like she has something wrong with her voice to me, and I would wager that it doesn't probably look like the normal 12-year-old girl.
Right.
So I think that, you know, certainly not necessarily here in our area in Iowa that we push kids to do things like that, but I think in general they probably are crossing a line where it's not safe or healthy.
Well, and Kristen, I have seen a trend as a parent. I've seen a lot more vocal lessons being offered to kids at younger ages. And of course, as kids develop musically, some kids sort of shine and they have talent at singing. And you think, wow, maybe we should do something with that. But have you also spotted that trend that more people are getting their children involved in formal performance at a younger age?
Yes, especially seeking out private vocal instruction at a younger and younger age. We sometimes get calls asking if we know of voice teachers for their 4-year-old or their 5-year-old. And typically, you don't start private voice until you're, you know, a teenager or older. So, yes, there's a trend towards more focus on the individual voice, definitely.
Well, and we've talked about how our vocal cords develop, but let's talk a little bit about how our musical skills develop. Can you walk me through what children are doing with music sort of naturally in those early years?
Well, if you think about a young child that's maybe only 3 or 4 years old and they're playing individually, maybe they have a doll or a truck or a stuffed animal, they sing spontaneously. You know, you can sort of hear their improvisation. There may be words, there may not be words, but they're making up sounds and melodies, and it's just a natural part of their everyday life. They just sing. But if you listen to the quality of the voice that's singing, it's light, it's clear, it's tends to be a very high range, and that's what a child voice is. And that's really where they naturally should be singing.
As you listen to children who are in that 3, 4, 5-year-old range, mm-hmm. and I know I have an 8-year-old who, ever since she was 3, she just doesn't stop singing, and she's not even aware that she's doing it.
Yes.
So, you know, we've all heard those kids, and some of them sound better than others. Is it possible to start identifying talent at that very early age?
Well, I think there's a difference between musical talent and the development of the voice. You can be extremely talented, but it has a large degree to do with how you process music in your brain. It has to do with your musical aptitude. And you aren't going to know that until a child begins to develop. So the quality of their actual vocal instrument is going to change and grow clear up until your early 30s, really. Mm-hmm. So they may have incredible talent, but you don't hear it in their voice, because what you think of as a talented voice is what you hear on American Idol. So it depends on what you think of as a talented voice. I mean,
right.
At the Iowa Youth Chorus, we would love to have a singer come to us with a light, clear, even soft quality, and that's a great voice, just as well as the one that's a little bit fuller and brasher. They're all good voices, and they both may be equally talented. They just have different instruments.
Well, and I think all of us that have listened to little kids sing, there is that sort of stage where they're listening to music, they want to sing mm-hmm. the music that they're hearing, and what they're singing doesn't really have much of a relationship to the music that they're trying to emulate. Is there a point in development when kids start to be able to copy melodies better and carry a tune?
Well, I think the idea of trying to copy what they're listening to is a big part of the problem, because they're listening to voices that are much more mature and older than they are. And it's a totally different instrument. The voice is completely different in everybody, because we're all made up of different materials and sizes and shapes. So the idea is that, yes, they can imitate other singers, but it's not necessarily a good idea. They need to develop their natural quality.
Well, and I'm just thinking about Christmas carols. You know, mm-hmm. you sing Frosty the Snowman mm-hmm. to a 2-year-old, and
right.
they try to sing it back. And,
right.
and the tune that they're singing doesn't necessarily have much to do with what you were
saying. Well, that's okay. That is a quality that will develop if they have good exposure to music and they have opportunities to sing, you know, with an appropriate model. Pitch matching is what you would call that. That does develop as they age, if they have experiences. Some singers come by it much more naturally than others, and that might be a matter of genetics or how much music is in the home or what are their early experiences with music. But everyone can learn to match pitch. So there are remedies for that.
With the Iowa Youth Chorus, I know that you have a number of different programs, and you work with children at many different ages. What are the youngest kids that you work with?
Well, in terms of the choir program, we start at age 6. So actually coming to a rehearsal and singing in a choir starts at age 6 and goes all the way up through 18. And you're placed in a choir based on your age and your ability. But we do also have an early childhood music component. And that is not performance or ensemble based. That's just an experiential. If you've heard of the Kinder music curriculum, it's similar to that, where they experience music through all forms, through movement, through playing instruments, through singing, through listening, storytelling, all kinds of things. So that's where you lay the groundwork for developing whatever your aptitude is or your talent in music. You just experience music in a childlike way, the way children have for millennia, playing song games and singing children's songs.
And when kids come to you at 6 or 7 years old and then join the primary choir, what kinds of music would they be performing?
We sing a lot of folk music and also folk music from other cultures because it tends to be in a fairly limited range. It's easy for them. It's great for pulling in different concepts like movement and what's the cross-cultural implications. They would not be singing heavy-duty classical music at that age. So songs that are appropriate for children, maybe once in a while a show tune, something that's for children and the text is appropriate. But I would say a lot of folk music at that age.
These are our kids who are singing together in a group. Do you need to pay a lot of attention to developing good vocal technique, or is that something that just kind of comes naturally?
You have to be careful of bad vocal technique. So if they're coming to you and they're exhibiting some problems, they're not using their voice in a healthy way, we would address that immediately. Most of them come singing very naturally, and under our direction, we don't ask them to push or do anything that's inappropriate. But some of them come already with some bad habits, even at age 6, that can happen.
Like what kind of bad habits?
They sing too loud. they try to push higher notes using their lower register. Once in a while, we have a singer who sings way above the pitch. They're just soaring and sailing away up there, and that's mainly a matter of not listening correctly. But in terms of vocal development, it's mainly they just are almost yelling instead of singing. There's too much pressure on the vocal cords.
Now, Joy, for kids who are putting too much pressure on their vocal cords, and I get from what you were saying earlier that many of these young people that we see on YouTube and on these television shows are pushing too hard. What are the dangers? What can happen?
Well, I think initially as they start to try to sing louder and out of a range that should be comfortable for them, the vocal folds actually start to experience swelling, or it's called edema. And unfortunately, as the swelling gets worse, then our brains actually start to compensate for that. And to compensate for that, then you have to push harder the next time you sing. And so it gets to be almost like this vicious circle where the harder you push, the more your voice gets tired and you have to work a little bit harder. And that in turn causes them to be more and more and more swollen over time.
All right. And we'll continue talking about this in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about musical training and vocal cord development. We'll also talk about what happens to our vocal cords as we not only mature, but get much older. Joy Hesse is a speech and language pathologist at Iowa ENT Center. And Kristen Stanton is here. She's artistic and executive director with the Iowa Youth Chorus. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about musical development and vocal cord development as well. Joy Hesse is here. She is a speech and language pathologist at the Iowa Ear, Nose, and Throat Center. She specializes in the care of professional voice users. Kristen Stanton is also here. She's artistic and executive director at the Iowa Youth Chorus. In just a few minutes, I'll be also talking with a young opera singer. We'll talk about how our voices develop as we age. And then later on in the hour, we'll also talk about what happens to our vocal cords in old age. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Joy, just before the break, we were talking about what might happen to a young person's voice if they push that voice too much. And you were talking about edema and swelling and how this is just something that would feed on itself because it becomes more difficult to sing and speak, and then they would push harder and the swelling would increase. Is this something that could do permanent damage, or is this something that would just get better if they stopped?
Well, it depends a little bit on what they do. You know, then the swelling, there's other steps that after that that, you know, then they can get nodules or calluses on the vocal folds. And if they continue to you know, to sing and to push, then they could conceivably certainly do damage, permanent damage, so that they're not able to sing. And I think you see that fairly often in that age group where they're a star and then suddenly you don't hear from them or see from them again. And that's probably because they've just, you know, done damage to the vocal folds where they're not able to perform any longer.
As kids age, we talk a lot about how voices change in puberty, of course. Mm-hmm. What is happening with the vocal cords and those vocal folds as a kid goes through puberty?
Well, just like the instability of your emotions and all the other things that go along with puberty that are horrible, unfortunately, the same just huge drastic changes are happening with your voice box and your vocal folds, where they're becoming, their size is changing, and, you know, how you use your voice changes. And, you know, we all have heard young men going through that, where there's, you know, they're speaking like a female, and then all of a sudden they go from a soprano voice to a bass voice.
Right.
And
they've been mistaken as their mom on the
phone
for years.
And then all of a sudden it's their dad.
Right.
And, so those are, you know, during that time, young men, and choral directors know this very well, that you kind of have to handle them a little bit with kid gloves, that they're, you know, you don't know what voice is going to come out that day. And, you know, certainly pushing them during that time period is not advisable, because, you know, the muscles are used to behaving in a certain way. And all of a sudden now I have basically a new instrument, and they have to learn that new instrument just like any other instrument. And, you know, females go through the same thing to some extent, not with the drastic changes, but, you know, males and females both, as they go through puberty, see changes to the larynx that, you know, we need to respect and take care of during that time.
Well, and Kristen, I'm sure that you encounter that with the young people that you work with all the time. That must be in many ways a very exciting time, but also that it makes a lot of people nervous too.
Right. At that middle school level, between the female and the male voices, you actually have total opposite things happening. The female voices tend to get a little breathier, and they sometimes lose a lot of power. And then, of course, the male voices are all over the map. And so we actually isolate the girls from the boys for about half an hour of their rehearsal, so we can sort of address some of those changes. But it's exciting, too, because you can tell them, well, you don't know what your voice is going to be. It's sort of like you're in your chrysalis, and who knows what will happen as you emerge on the other side of teendom. And the voice really does continue to change and grow way into your adult years. So the important thing is that they keep singing, and they sing appropriately for the voice that they have.
And how long does that period of real transition where things are really up in the air seem to last with the kids you work with, Kristen?
Well, the girls aren't that dramatic, and they usually don't struggle with it, and they'll usually notice by about 14 or 15 they're developing some richness to their voice, and maybe their range is sort of settling into soprano or alto or whatever. With the boys, again, it can't literally be overnight. I mean, 1 week you hear them and they have top notes, and then all of a sudden the top notes are gone. So it can last anywhere from a couple of months to a couple of years. We try to keep our boys singing in their upper range as long as possible, even if that means trying to access the notes differently with their falsetto, because the longer they can hold on to those high notes and then just gradually add the lower range, the more they can keep singing. They don't have to just drop out like, you know, some European boy choirs. They just say, okay, your voice is changing.
You're done.
You're done until, you know, you're totally changed, then you can come back. But yeah, we try to keep them singing through all of that.
Well, and Joy, as Kristen was just saying, our voices continue to change as we age. Is there an approximate point at which we have an adult voice? It's done changing for most of our lives?
Well, I would say I would agree with Kristen that it's probably, you know, mid-20s to early 30s. You know, in the professional world, as far as opera singers, that it should be mature somewhere around. And that's probably where they're at their very best, or their peak would be at that point. And then hopefully they can sustain that for many years with a productive career.
Well, and we hear this in speaking voices as well, not just our singing voices, right?
Oh, yes. That, you know, but usually when you're in high school, you'll have your fairly normal speaking voice by the time you're, you know, 15, 16. for most of us. And then hopefully it stays nice and healthy, usually well into your 60s at least.
All right. Well, we'll talk about what happens then later on in the hour. I want to bring someone else into the conversation now. Eric Faring is a senior at Drake University. He is in vocal performance, and he'll actually be performing in Carmen with the Cedar Rapids Opera Theater. It premieres on Friday, and also there's a show on Saturday at the Paramount Theater in Cedar Rapids as well. Hello, Eric.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And you are one of Joy's patients. You became one of Joy's patients just before your sophomore recital. Can you tell us what was going on with your voice that led you to get help?
Yeah, it's just kind of one of those things. I was singing along, you know, doing my thing, and all of a sudden I was just having some major issues getting sound to be produced. I would maybe sing the middle C, and then I remember it just like skyrocketing into this falsetto, screechy thing that I never had before. And so I was like, oh, it's Monday. My recital's on Saturday. I'll just wait a day and see what happens. And it didn't get any better, so I kind of freaked out naturally. And so my teacher, Leanne Freeman Miller, who is a good friend of Joy's, kind of was like, you should go and see Joy and see what's going on. And I went and saw Joy, and we kind of talked through a lot of things about acid reflux, GERD, as it's called, and found out that that's really a lot of what was going on. And I had it kind of pretty bad at that point, so I got some medication to help deal with acid reflux, which is a pretty natural thing for a lot of singers, you know, as you're constantly supporting and pushing on that diaphragm, acid that's building up in the stomach kind of just naturally makes its way up the esophagus and causes trouble. So eventually I got that kind of taken care of, and it's under control for the most part now. So, but yeah, that was my first introduction to Joy.
Well, and Joy, when someone like Eric comes to you and they say, I'm trying to sing, my voice is all over the place, how do you diagnose the problem?
Well, at our office, we have two different types of scopes or endoscopies. There's one, they both look very scary when you see them. One just goes into the mouth, no further back than where you brush your teeth. And then the other one actually goes through the nasal passages and back and over the back and to look at the voice box, which is right behind your Adam's apple.
All right. And when you look at the voice box, what can you see?
Well, the picture quality is wonderful that we have with our equipment. You know, you look first of all to make sure everything is moving, because there's certainly sometimes there's problems with movement of the vocal folds. You look for inflammation, redness, swelling, and then hopefully not any sort of lesions or masses like nodules or polyps. There can oftentimes be increased, you know, almost like you get varicose veins on your legs. You can also have increased vessels on the vocal folds, and that can be actually very scary and kind of problematic, because those blood vessels can burst or rupture during very vigorous voice activity. And so, first of all, you need to make sure that there's nothing else going on, that it really is just a, you know, either the reflux or an acute illness, and then you treat quickly based on those findings.
Well, and Eric, before you went to see Joy, were you even aware of some of the possibilities that could be going wrong with your voice?
At that point, I really wasn't. I kind of found out once I got to Joy the possibilities and the things I should really watch out for. Even the simple things like, I remember I had a list of things that I should watch out for, you know, things like a healthy diet, a more healthy diet, perhaps less like, you know, greasy food, or things like even chewing gum a lot of the times can help start causing acid to be built up in the stomach. And those kinds of things, just to watch out for them, being more aware of the instrument. You're talking about as you mature, the voice, you know, it will mature. And well, I think a lot of that is just awareness as well, knowing what your instrument can do, knowing what it can handle and what messes with it, you know.
Have you changed the way that, I mean, you've talked about changing your diet, et cetera. Have you also changed the way you sing to be easier on your voice?
I think that's kind of the goal as we continue in our education, surely, is to find easier ways to make the sounds that we have to produce. I'm still a student, although I'm singing professionally, and I think we're always a student. Joey DiDonato, who's one of the most famous opera singers nowadays, even wrote that, you know, I'm always a student. I'm always learning, learning from my peers, always, you know, continuously taking coachings and lessons. You know, we're always students. We're always learning. And who's to say that that teacher doesn't have something that they can teach me, you know? So I surely am still learning, yes, and trying to find ways to produce better sounds, a healthier sound.
Well, and we were just talking a couple of minutes ago how opera singers tend to reach their peak in their 30s. So is that frustrating right now to be a young man in your early 20s?
Yes. yeah, it is a bit frustrating. Opera does have a lot of stigmas about certain roles being sung by people in certain age groups. But, I mean, that's part of the world. You know, you kind of have to earn your stripes, and just a certain number of your age has a lot to do with it. You know, either emotional development, how can you know how to kill someone at a young age of 20 in Carmen, you know, as Don José? How can you really feel that strong of emotion at the age of 21, you know? But yeah, that it is a bit frustrating knowing that my instrument won't be, you know, even close to fully developed until then. But, you know, youth has its positivity, you know. still flexible, you know. I can move quickly. Perhaps I won't be moving as quickly at 30. I'm not really sure. You know, so youth does have its positivity, though.
Oh, Eric, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Eric Faring is a senior in vocal performance at Drake University. He will be performing in Carmen with the Cedar Rapids Opera Theater on Friday and Saturday at the Paramount Theater in Cedar Rapids. And Joy, when I listen to somebody sing opera, of course, I could not do any of what they're doing, but it's so complex, it's so difficult, and it sounds like it would be very hard on one's voice. Is singing opera something you can do for a lifetime, for an entire career, and maintain healthy vocal cords?
Well, yeah, I think that Eric probably could have spoke better than I do as far as, you know, names of professional singers, but you certainly see many singers, even with the Des Moines Opera, that are, you know, I don't ask their ages, obviously, but probably well into their 50s and 60s. So as long as they have very good technique and they, you know, they are constantly very vigilant about taking care of their voices. And, you know, I agree that remaining in touch with a coach or someone who can, you know, sometimes bring you back to reality if you're starting to develop bad techniques, those are all things that they can do to maintain longevity.
You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. If you have questions about your voice or your children's voices, you can give us a call. Emily is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
I am a former student of Kristen, and I don't know if you remember me or not. It's a long time ago, but I used to attend the Iowa Youth Chorus, and it was absolutely wonderful. It's an experience I'll never forget, and I think it affected the rest of my life.
And are you still singing?
I am. I am in college now, and I think I did Iowa Youth Chorus 3rd to 6th grade, I'm pretty sure. And I think it's one of the main reasons that I'm still singing today.
All right. Well, Emily, thank you so much for calling.
Well, thank you.
And Kristen, obviously, it's a wonderful experience for kids on a lot of levels, not just because of the singing part. But if you have kids who seem to be interested in vocal performance, and you're not in Des Moines, but what do you recommend for people?
Well, first of all, Emily, send me an email because I like to know your last name and where you are and what you're doing. I think, of course, this would be my perspective as a choral director, that singing in a choir for certainly singers in the elementary age is the best way for them to have a chance to share their passion. Certainly, you can take voice lessons, you can sing in church, you can sing at school, but when you sing in a choir, you are getting the opportunity to have that social aspect as well of joining with other kids who love to do this just as much as you do. You know, you mentioned your daughter who sings all the time. I have choirs full of kids who cannot stop singing. Their parents would say the same thing. So you just send them to us because we love having them. So when they sing in a choir under, you know, under proper instruction, they're going to get all the basic vocal technique that somebody at that age, you know, should have and would need to have in order to let their voice develop properly. And it's not complicated. It's how do you place your voice? What's your posture? How do you breathe? How do you connect the breath with the voice? And then, of course, all the performance aspects of how do you present yourself and actually music reading. Of course, music literacy is important. So singing in a choir is great. If you like theater and you want to be in a playhouse show or some community theater production, that's another. It can be very healthy. There's no reason why you shouldn't do that. That's an opportunity for you to sing as well.
Well, Kristen, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Kristen Stanton is Artistic and Executive Director at the Iowa Youth Chorus. And Joy Hesse is also here. She'll stay with us. She's a speech and language pathologist at Iowa ENT Center. She specializes in the care of professional voice users. We'll be taking your calls when we get back at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll also talk about how our vocal cords continue to change as we age and some of the challenges that can create in old age. That's coming up in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about musical education and vocal cord development. With me is Joy Hesse. She's a speech and language pathologist at Iowa ENT Center. She specializes in the care of professional voice users, not just singers, but people who use their voices professionally in other ways as well. And we are going to talk about how our vocal cords continue to change as we get into old age as well in just a moment. But we have a few people on the line who'd love to talk with you, Joy, and you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Christopher is on the line from Dumont. Hi, Christopher.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
I have a gift for singing like Elvis. I have friends that ask me to sing Elvis, and I do pretty well at it. And next week, I'm going to be in Clarksville at Doc's, if you know what that is. I'm going to be doing karaoke, and I'm going to sing Elvis.
Okay, so you do a pretty good Elvis impersonation, is what you're saying.
Yes, I do. People have followed me home just to hear me sing songs. People have asked me to go to the park and meet them at a specific time just to hear me sing them.
All right, and what's your concern? What's your concern?
Well, will I always have this gift if I nurture it and I practice it regularly?
Well, I would say yes, that, you know, as long as you're not abusing, you know, we have to manipulate the voice when you are impersonating. So it depends on, you know, the degree. And certainly Elvis, he wasn't necessarily, how he sang was not hard on his vocal folds typically. So I would think that you should be able to continue to do that, you know, as long as you, you know, what's good for your body is also good for your vocal folds. And so, you know, hydration and enough sleep and maintaining a good diet, all of those things play into a healthy voice. And so as long as you're taking care of yourself in general, you should be able to continue to do that.
Christopher, thanks a lot for your call. And Joy, I know since you work with professionals, there are many people who use their voices professionally who use a voice that is not their natural speaking voice. There are people who do voiceovers or who are in other kinds of radio, not in public radio, where they have a different vocal persona depending on what kind of program they're doing. Is that something that causes people to have voice problems often?
Well, I think, yeah, anytime you are changing your normal voice, there's the opportunity to damage. You know, certainly teachers are probably my favorite group because I see lots of them, and they oftentimes have difficulties because they have a teacher's voice that they use in the classroom, and then they have their normal regular voice that they use at home. And oftentimes the teacher voice is louder and more strident and more effortful. And so and the same could be true of radio and TV personalities, that if you are consistently using more muscular effort or doing something at a pitch that's not within a comfortable level for you, there's the opportunity to do damage, especially if you are prone to things like reflux disease or allergies, or, you know, there's so many things that can affect your voice besides how you use it.
Can you teach someone to project without damaging their voice?
Yes, that's actually possible. That, you know, with a singing background, it's much easier because they've already made the connection between their breath and the voice. And so breath support is the foundation for a healthy voice, no matter if you're a singer or not a singer. And so the key to projecting and having a nice, easy voice is teaching them how to breathe appropriately.
All right. Craig is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Craig.
Hi. How does society deal with a prodigy like Jackie Vanko without messing a person like that up?
Well, okay, I don't know what we can talk about her personal life, her future as a child star, but she's one of those young prodigies that has been on America's Got Talent. She's put out 5 different albums. She's only 13 years old. She sings classical crossover music. So she's one of those kind of people that we were talking about earlier. But is there a possibility that there are some who just have a naturally mature voice at that age?
Well, possibly. I would say still probably not, though. You know, we have humans are humans, and you know what normally happens, that she would be, I mean, you would think that she would fall within the realm of normal, you would hope. But I suppose there could be a few outliers where she just developed a little bit sooner. But I would still say that just because of how she's using her voice now, that she would certainly be at a much higher risk for developing problems and bad habits.
Okay, so she may be experiencing the peak of her musical mm-hmm. career now, and may not be able to perform at this kind of level as an adult.
Right.
And let's talk about how our vocal cords continue to change as we age. We've talked about how you sort of come into your adult voice as a musician or even just in speaking in your mid-20s, maybe even your early 30s. Now let's jump a couple of decades ahead. As people get older, you hear changes in their voices. You can guess somebody's age by what they sound like, not always correctly, but but you can. What are some of the changes that we hear as people get into their later years?
Well, you're exactly right that you can, you know, when you listen to someone's voice, you can tell many things about them, from their age to their gender to, you know, their general health and mood. And as we age, you know, if you listen to very elderly people, their voices typically get softer and breathier. Elderly males will oftentimes have a higher pitch because, unfortunately, like other parts of our bodies, the vocal folds are kind of prone to sagging and as they begin to lose some of their tone, then the voice becomes kind of breathy and soft.
Well, as we age, a lot of us lose muscle tone in different ways. And of course, you can exercise many parts of your body to combat that to a degree. Is this an atrophy that's caused because as people age, they don't talk as much?
Well, I think I personally see lots of people in that category where, you know, they may have been a teacher or any other profession. And I think when you're working, you're talking during the day. And then when they retire, some of them go into this mode of, you know, I might not talk all day to anyone, or I might have 1 or 2 phone calls, but I just don't talk. And so then it becomes an issue of disuse or underuser kind of syndrome, where just like other muscles in your arms and legs, if you're not up and exercising, the vocal folds kind of shrink or atrophy. And those are changes that can be reversed once you talk to them about, oh, you know, I didn't think about that, you know, I should be talking or singing throughout the day occasionally to keep my voice in shape.
Well, and we have a natural tendency. I know right now, if I were to lose my voice today, I would think I need a few days of rest, and then maybe it'll be better. It sounds like you're saying as we age, rest may be exactly the wrong therapy.
Yes, that's exactly true, where, you know, they start to notice changes in their voice. Well, a lot of times they say, well, you know, I can't really sing anymore, and so I dropped out of my choir. And, you know, my voice gets tired by the end of the day, or it starts to get hoarse or raspy. So then I just tell people, well, I just can't really talk anymore now. And unfortunately, that is the opposite of what they should be doing, where instead of resting, they should be using it more and more to try to strengthen it again.
When people come to you with problems like that, do you give them exercises to try to strengthen their voice again?
Yes, there's kind of two. We always start with the easy and go to the more difficult, where a lot of times you start with therapy, which is a lot like singing. Lots of my exercises are actually singing-based, where you will give them, you know, usually a month or two of exercises to try to strengthen the voice. And if that's not helpful, there are actually now surgical techniques that are pretty minor surgeries. You know, you go in and you come home the same day, outpatient surgery, that can actually augment or fill the vocal folds to allow them to come together to improve the voice as well.
And if these muscles atrophy and you start doing exercises, do they respond well?
They do for the most part. I would say that if I have a patient who's very motivated and, you know, really wants to improve their voice, I would say most of the time, over 50% of the time, speech therapy or voice therapy can be helpful for that. And then you have the other people who, you know, just want a quick fix. And so they would, you know, sign up for the surgery before even trying therapy.
Interesting. Well, we have a couple of people who'd love to talk to you, and you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Jim is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I just was curious to know why it seems that your voice is nice and full and rich in the morning, and as the day goes on, it just gets huskier and higher or whatever. I guess that would be my case. I don't know about anybody else.
Well, Jim, I tend to sound a little more like B. Arthur early in the morning, and then I get better as I go on. But Joy, I'm sure you've encountered that, where the voice is strong in the morning hours, and it gets thinner as the day goes on.
And that's probably due what happens during the night. You know, usually, and this could be for both of you, actually, if you have a different voice in the morning, that is probably due to a little bit of swelling or edema to the vocal folds. And at nighttime is kind of a prime time when people can actually have more acid reflux that comes up during the night as you're supine or laying down. Then gravity no longer is keeping the acid in your stomach, but it's allowing it to travel back up into your voice box. And that can add to a little bit of swelling. And then, you know, once you're upright and you get your voice warmed up and you're talking more, that improves, and so that's probably the cause for that change in your voice throughout the day.
All right, and when Jim is finding that his voice is getting thinner or more tired as the day goes on, not talking is not the proper prescription, right?
Correct, and I just heard him very briefly, but oftentimes that can be the initial signs of either, you know, something going on with the vocal folds, whether it be swelling. You know, the voice box is right in between or right in the middle of your nose and sinuses, and your lungs and your stomach can all converge. And so you have to look at all of those separately to decide, you know, what is causing the change in the voice.
Wouldn't happen to be stress, would it?
Oh, yeah, stress. We all love that. That actually plays a major role with acid reflux. And most of our patients are not the classic people who have heartburn or chest pain. Most of our patients just have throat symptoms, like they clear their throat a lot. They feel like there's something in their throat. They complain of post-nasal drip or mucus. Some of them have a cough, vocal fatigue, as in what you talked about, your voice gets worse as the day goes on. Those are all things that we would be very suspicious for acid playing a role.
Well, the voice is an amazing thing. I mean, it's like a violin for some of us, and for others it's just like a trash bag. But, you know, things go through it, and, you know, we have to breathe through it. We do everything with our voice. It's just amazing how well it works.
Well, Jim, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, Julia's on the line in Union County. Hi, Julia.
Hi. I'm a music ed teacher for 25 years, and my primary is elementary. And I cringe when people send me those videos of those vocalists that are overtaxing themselves, and they say, oh, listen, don't you wish you had this girl in her choir? And I would say, yeah, because I would totally change what she's doing. But my biggest concern, and this is something that we as elementary music professionals and teachers, I think, have to start addressing and become more aware of is, and just, it's something that I think the more children's choirs and more children singing and the more people like Joy are talking, and we hear more of this at professional conferences, is that we need to start vocal health and vocal good vocal production clear back in preschool and kindergartner. I've got kindergartners that come into my classroom new, and they try to sing like Daddy. You know, these little boys are trying to sing like Daddy. I said, that's not where your voice is. You can start doing that when you have whiskers on your chin. When you start getting whiskers, then and yes, I do have some sixth graders whose voices are changing, but then I also have, juniors in high school that their voices are changing. You know, teaching those kids to use good vocal production, that they're supposed to sound like children. They're not supposed to sound like opera singers when they're 5 and 6 and 7 years old, and letting the boys overcome this macho idea that they have to sound like a man, that, well, that sounds like a girl. I say, no, what it sounds like is a strong boy's voice. And you sing, there is a point there where the boys' voices are like laser beams, and they're like focused, and they're like crystal, and they're stronger than the girls' voices. And then they say, oh, wow, that I never thought of it that way. So it's just a whole idea of a whole way of making sure that kids know where their voices are supposed to be and bringing that up correctly.
Well, Julia, thank you so much for calling. And I have a feeling that with you, Joy, Julia is preaching to the choir.
Oh, I love her. She was spot on everything that she said.
You know, one of the things that strikes me in our conversation this hour is that although we do so much with our voices, as Jim was saying just a moment ago, this is something that most of us, if we don't use our voices professionally, take completely for granted.
Oh, you do. Like, that's something I hear so often is that, you know, I didn't appreciate my voice until I started having trouble, because people, you know, if you have a voice disorder, when you first meet them, they may think that you're sick or contagious, and then they stand back from you and they're afraid of you. And then just the amount of effort when something's wrong, it's just much more effortful. And people say, I get so tired. You know, by the time I come home, I don't have the energy to talk to my family or to my kids because it's so effortful for me to use my voice.
Mm. So something we need to take care of and exercise just like the rest of us. Joy, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Joy Hesse is a speech language pathologist at Iowa ENT, that's Ear, Nose, and Throat Center. She specializes in the care of professional voice users. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins, with technical support today from John Pemble. And another professional voice user is here in the studio with me now. Ben Kiefer, host of River to River. What's coming up on the show?
I've never
today,
been
Ben?
Called that, Charity. I think I'll put that on my visiting card. Professional voice user?
Sure.
I think we could come up with something with a better ring. But anyway, it's hard for us to remember a time when we didn't connect cigarette smoking with serious health risks. But there was a time, Charity. 50 years ago, it was the Surgeon General who released that landmark report on the hazards of cigarettes. So we're going to do a stock taking, look at smoking in the world, but more precisely in the Midwest, in the United States, and see what's effective in terms of public policies and less so, and also in terms of kicking the habit. We want to reach out to our listeners to have you smokers and former smokers tell us what worked and what didn't over the noon hour when it comes to stopping smoking, kicking the habit.
All right, Ben, thank you so much. That's River to River coming up today at noon. Tomorrow at 10 o'clock, we will hear from President Barack Obama in place of Talk of Iowa.